Yo, 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 everybody, what's going on? Welcome to episode 55 of Climbing the Ladder. I'm your host, Shan Man V, and co-hosting with me, as always, Mr. Richard Lewis from Cadred. What's
hey,
up?
What's up?
Yeah, you can tell that John's missing today.
Just looking forward to a great show. Yeah. Psyched about this one. Great guest.
Yeah, awesome, awesome. Yeah, as you can tell, John's missing today. John had a work emergency come up, so
that's not gonna make why it I'm this psyched week. About this show. No, John.
No, John. You know what's funny is I wanted John on here too because I had this plan early in the week to go and get like some kind of costume thing that could kind of make me bald, you know, like all three of you guys. But but man, I didn't end up getting that. I didn't end up finding it because there's just no costume places. It's like open these days, right? Because it's not close to Halloween, but. But yeah, it was a pretty good plan I thought I had, but I couldn't pull it off. But anyways, yeah, so he'll be back next week, guys. So don't freak out; he's not here. But this week we got a great guest. You know, he's never been on any of my shows before, so I don't know why either. It just never dawned on me to ask you until now. I know I never dawned on me to ask you until now, which is just stupid. But we have the great Thomas Killian, aka Caldor, caster for all the WCS. Korea matches that you've probably been watching recently, but how's it going, buddy?
Pretty good. Pretty early right now, but it's fine. Oh, thankfully, the time difference is not as bad, so it's okay.
Not
like,
as
it just
bad?
Works out with the US. Like, 14 hours, so I would have woken up in like 1 hour anyway, so it's cool.
Yeah, yeah. No, I appreciate you definitely getting up this early, because for those of you who don't know, it's 5 a.m. over there, so it's 5, right? 5 a.m.? 5 a.m.?
Yeah.
6 a.m.? Yeah. So yeah, definitely appreciate you. Just coming on at the regular time, because I know a lot of folks in the past have been, no, I can't do it. I gotta only do it in the mid afternoon. And over in Korea, it's just like, shit,
nah, it doesn't
shit,
really
dude.
Matter. I mean, these days I don't do as many live casts anymore. But when I came to Korea the first time, all the European tournaments that I casted, I usually had to wake up at like 3 or at like 2 a.m. So 5 is like 5 is no problem.
Yeah, cool. All right, so let's jump into some topics that we have for today, and I kind of want to just start it off by talking a little bit about Shoutcraft America. Obviously, it's over here, and Caldor, you've been in Korea for a long time, so just kind of went ahead a discussion between all of us, and you guys been following it, and kind of saw that the finals were, was it Tuesday? It's Tuesday, right? Yeah, Tuesday, and everything just kind of finished this week, and a lot of people have been talking about it, and obviously Jenna and TB have posted. Jenna started, I think, with her tweet, and there's just a lot of comments on Reddit about her tweet about, just sounding. It kind of sounded like they weren't going to do it anymore, but it turns out that really wasn't the case. But have you been following all this, you guys?
Yeah. I've been keeping up with the drama. Always, I love the drama. I live for the drama.
I love the drama. How about you, Tom?
I followed most of it. I saw a few of the groups because of the time difference. I didn't catch all of them. I couldn't see the finals, but I followed the results. And also, when it was first initiated, the reason why exactly they hosted Shoutcraft America. Also, a few things that the players didn't like too much. Like, not the players that were participating in the tournaments, but others wanted to have a chance to play too. But with the criteria that they used, they couldn't participate. But it made sense from both angles. So they just made sure that in the next season, everyone can participate and that everyone knows the drill. But for the first season, and they had to find some kind of algorithm or some kind of matter of determination of how to pick the players.
Yeah.
So Scarlett, for example, was a little bit bummed out that she couldn't participate. She told me that she would have loved to participate in the tournament, but it just didn't work for her because of how the players were picked.
Yeah,
for the first season.
And for those of you that don't know exactly what Caldor is talking about, is given the timing of Shoutcraft, the timing of it had a lot to do with Blizzard announcing WCS NA wasn't region locked, right? So they kind of put this together really quickly, and it needed to coincide with the end of the ladder season too, given that the ending rankings were the determination of who was going to make it. So what ended up happening was that a lot of folks who, Scarlett in particular, who play on other account, like she plays on like a barcode account or something that's not necessarily assigned to her, the account's not under her name type of thing, her BattleNet account. So that was one of the stipulations. They had to actually have their real account. They were playing under their real account to qualify to be able to play.
I think the same was also true for Huck. She told me that she and Huck really wanted to participate, but they couldn't. So they would wait for the next season. And if there's a second season, then they can do it. And we'll make sure that they will be within the ranks to get qualified.
Yeah, Huck has like 10 accounts. They're all depressing as shit, too, the names of them. It's just like, God, Chris, it's like, can't you think of more happy names for your accounts? Jeez. But, yeah, so next season, you know, we will see a few more big names. But, you know, big names or not, right? It's not really the point of it. I mean, the point of it really is to promote NA players. And I think the biggest value comes to NA players that nobody knows about, right? So there's that balance that they're having to kind of walk. But, you know, in this here, I'm going to show you guys. In this, I think, blog that TB wrote today, he's really transparent about everything. I mean, he even has, like, the viewership numbers here. And, you know, given the viewership numbers, I think it was a great, I mean, it was a huge success for the players that participated. Because, I mean, those players would get, man, like, 10,000th. You know, like maybe a thousandth or 10,000th the number of views that they got, like, you know, just those days. And Kane winning, you know, somebody that's obviously got picked up by Root recently, but, you know, for the most part, he still is a very, very, you know, he's not very known, right? So it was really, really great that he ended up winning the tournament too.
What really helped them was just like the whole WCS thing, and they were riding that wave a little bit. Of course, the tournament itself was also great. They had like the casters there to draw their attention to it, especially within the first days when they had Husky and TB doing it with all the YouTube followership. That's, of course, a huge draw, but also the players in itself and the whole way that they set everything up. So that worked quite well for them.
Yeah, yeah. So what do you think about that? I mean, obviously, Calder, you've had a lot of experience in Europe, right? And you know that you're, you know, obviously, you've been in Korea for a while now, so, but, you know, you know how the grassroots works in Europe. How does this kind of compare to just Europe? Because Europe right now, I think everybody would agree, is in a better situation than NA is, by a long shot. Like,
okay, well, I personally think that we set the entire infrastructure in Europe with Warcraft 3 like 10 years ago. That was when I started out as a shoutcaster, when all the tournaments popped up, when we started to just put everything on a really good infrastructure that StarCraft 2 benefits from now. Everyone is only talking about StarCraft 2, and a lot of people that are in the community don't really have the experience that they know what happened before that. But NA didn't have that. NA, there were a few players that were playing Warcraft, but most of them were just participating in the European tournaments. We would even fly them over later on when there was some money involved for the tournaments. Arma team did that for a long time. And we were just setting everything up so that we have the infrastructure that we have now. In the US, Warcraft wasn't as big, and StarCraft Brood War was not as popular. I mean, outside of Korea, of course, there was also a scene, but in comparison to what we have today, it was tiny. And we have so many like tournaments and leagues in Europe right now. It's a little bit less than we had in Warcraft, which is actually, to me, pretty surprising, especially when you look at the team leagues. But at the end of Warcraft, what happened was that we had a shift from team leagues to individual leagues, because for the teams, it was really expensive to fly all the Koreans over to Europe, and therefore they demanded like individual leagues. So I think that has to do with the shift that took place. But we have so many tournaments. Like, you can play in online tournaments every day, and there's a really good coverage for it as well, whereas in the US you're really limited, so the exposure is not really as big for a player that can make it in the weekly and in the monthly tournaments with the finals. On the other hand, we don't have something like Shoutcraft America right now, so just some esports personality that has not only the money but also the passion to throw such a tournament, that's pretty awesome. So what TB did there, I mean, that is really fucking amazing. I personally think that's quite something. I mean, Jenna and him doing such a tournament and putting all that money in that, that is, I mean, I respect that a lot. That really helps the US and especially the lesser known players. As you say, for example, Kane, I mean, within the US, yes, he's known, but if you would have asked any like Korean player or maybe the other Europeans as well, they would not really have known who that is. Maybe if you were caught the name, but it's not like he's like another Huck or whatever. Yeah. Not yet, at least.
I mean, even Drunken Boy, and, you know, Drunken Boy, for instance, like, he kind of validated his run in the WCS qualifiers with his play in Shoutcraft America, too. So, I mean, Drunken Boy, I think, is on the map now, too. And, I mean, he was like a ladder warrior just a few months ago, right? So, it's obviously, he was on FXO, but still, he's pretty much like a ladder warrior before. So, it's you know, that's amazing, too. You know, one of the things that you pointed out there was that just that, you know, they're putting in a lot of money into it. And, you know, that's one thing I want to make sure everybody that's watching the show understands, is that it's not just about creating a $10,000 tournament for NA only. It's that TB is doing it. You know, that's what's huge. You know, having a personality that has that much reach, is why this is so important. And I think it's really important that we all, you know, support this, you know, especially the folks in NA try to support this and, you know, be encouraging. Obviously, feedback is good, and, you know, Jenna obviously welcomes feedback, but, you know, just saying that the players weren't interesting and that sort of bit, I mean, that just drives me crazy, honestly, because this is something I'm really passionate about, too, and it's that, you know, we have to start somewhere. Like, yeah. I can't stand people just talking about, like, the end goal when nobody talks about, like, how to get there. And
the thing is, like, Jenna was on a show. I'm not quite sure which one it was. I think it was State of the Game, but I don't remember correctly.
Probably,
and
yeah.
They were talking about, like, the success of the tournament and how everything went. And she was talking a lot about how the viewership came to pass. While I agree with most of her points, a few of the things that she said I really couldn't agree on. Like, for example, she was talking about how the players basically make this tournament and how the fact that TB and Husky are casting it is not much of a big thing as people made it out to be. And I don't really think that is true. The games were really good. You had, like, a really solid play there, and the players really made a name for themselves. But before the tournament, if you would have just put in a random tournament with no name whatsoever and you would have just said, okay, like, we throw $10,000 at it and these are the players, and you wouldn't have had TB and the and Husky and everyone just promoting it and it also riding a little bit the wave of WCS or the failures of WCS, I don't think you would have had nearly as many viewers. So I think that was really something, for the first time, that was definitely something that lived with TB putting his name in, with all the things that happened. The time was right for a tournament like this. Then you had to have the balls to actually host the tournament, put the money out there, and with the players really got a lot of exposure. But without that, without the entire organization, I don't think it would have been nearly as successful.
Yeah,
but with the next one, of course, you like have the reputation from tournament number one. So then it's also a little bit of a different story. I mean, you're building up a brand right now.
Yeah, definitely. So Richard, I know you've always been a big opponent of just tournaments having casters, you know, be the draw, right? So that's kind of what Kaldor's talking about in this particular case, but it's actually it was actually the benefit of it, you know, just having these big names kind of draw viewers. Like, what do you think of that, like, in this particular case? Oh, I can't hear you. Can't hear you, buddy.
You muted him, confess.
I'm unmuted myself.
Yeah, he muted himself, man. So.
I was sat here with my blood boiling. That's what I was. No, I'm kidding. I wanted Jenna to, you know, I wanted what she was saying to kind of be true, because it would be great if it was all about the players. But in this instance, you know, With the absence of the big names, which I think actually went on to be a good thing, and a good thing for the tournament, and a good thing for those that followed the tournament, because, as you said, it created these storylines.
Yeah.
But what's going to hook people in to watch it in the first place, and we've seen this time and time again in StarCraft, it's the casters. It is. They seem to be the people that carry the most weight. And as you know, you've rightly said, both you and Kaldor, you know, if it isn't a total biscuit thing, I think this is viewed as another small tournament that means well, but it doesn't go on to be the shot in the arm for the North American scene that it clearly was. And exactly right. I mean, everyone's going to be so hyped about watching the next one now. And maybe then it can be about the players, because we're going to have, you know, people coming into it that didn't get a chance to compete the first time round. You know, are people going to come and defend their crowns? And we've got a whole, you know, new set of storylines. But definitely to get it off the ground and to get the viewership that it achieved, which is phenomenal considering, you know, you've got to say it's all about, you know, the people who casted it, and certainly, as loath as I might be to say it, having the Total Biscuit brand associated with it.
Yeah, I mean, the prize money, honestly, it's not even that much of a factor.
No,
it was never about
the prize money either. I mean, it's not a prestigious tournament.
It's money. Come on, $4,000 is nothing to just, like, write home about.
Well, yeah, but a 10K pool for an online tournament?
That is, yeah, maybe. Amazing. I mean, yeah, again, is. Obviously, I'm... I'm talking about what I see, you know, with the League of Legends that I cover and stuff. And a lot of European tournaments.
Don't get started with League of Legends.
Yeah. I'm not going to.
Oh, come on. That was like my topic. No, that's okay. That's my topic, like number five. No,
that's
I'm just
a team game versus individual league game. That's a paid game versus a free game. You can't compare that.
Right. Yeah, okay. But it's not a massive chunk of change in the grand scheme of things, is what I'm saying. But it's the ethos, it was the idea behind the tournament that really made it resonate with people, that we all looked at the collective failings of WCS, we all looked at what was happening in the North American scene, which has been something that everyone's been talking about for so long, and yet no one's really done anything to try and redress the balance, and that's what this tournament was about, and that's, you know, why I think it was as popular as what it was. It wasn't about, you know, prize money or, you know, prestige, it was a tournament that was as much about ethos and wanting to fix things, you know, which I think it achieved very well.
Yeah, I just want to be clear that there are a lot of people that are doing tournaments in NA. Like, I know them all too, and I want to make sure that people know that TB is not the first person to do this. I mean, there's SoCal Cable's been doing SoCal events forever. Canada folks are trying to, you know, create this collection of lands, you know, create this kind of circuit of lands. And there's been a lot of the TESPA guys too, right, in Austin. Lots of great NA tournaments. It's just, you know, they just don't get the recognition because it's not supported by a huge personality. And that's why Shotcraft is just, you know, just on another scale because.
But this is the other problem you've got with grassroots and trying to fix problems at the grassroots, that unfortunately the people that view that as an important thing to do are grassroots themselves, and therefore it never really snowballs and gains the attention of anyone else. It never has the resources thrown in it or the money thrown at it.
Just a second there. I have to put in there because one of the things that, for example, happened when StarCraft 2 came out, like, we've been doing tournaments for the Warcraft for years, for like an eternity. And of course, with Warcraft, we had to adapt to a lot of things once that the game was actually out, and we realized that a little bit later because the scene is very different. But what we did from the beginning, that was even before I was in Korea, when the game came out, there were weekly tournaments that were hosted in Europe, but at the same time, most of these weekly tournaments also tried to establish themselves in the US. And the lack of interest of the American players was one of the main reasons why those tournaments weren't successful. So in the end, the US scene, to a certain extent, is also responsible for their own problems right now. If you look at a Zota Cup NA, you have basically only Koreans participating and winning in there. It was getting a little bit better, but there were times when there were so few players actually participating in the tournament that it was pretty obvious that nobody could get the recognition because nobody was participating. And there were efforts made by other organizations as well to like get weekly things started in the US. And I know that by now we have a few tournaments that are running, but it's always very, very difficult for some reason to actually get these tournaments going.
Well, but they're not region-locked. I mean, you just talked about Zotac has like a bunch of Koreans. I mean, the same deal with Playhems. Every time I watched Playhem NA, it was
how
like a revival.
How does that matter? You have like the storylines there as well, and a lot of the players that are participating in the European scene have made their names by defeating Koreans on a weekly basis. And of course, for the Koreans, it's always a bit of an issue with the delay that is bigger to Europe than to North America.
Absolutely, that's a huge deal.
But still, you have players like Paul, like Hyun, like Revival. All of them are participating in European tournaments as well, and are winning them also on a regular basis. So it's not like that competition isn't there in Europe. I mean, you have to actually put your name out there if you really want to achieve something. And for some, a tournament like Zota might be too small, but others definitely have the chance.
Well, I mean, I agree with you there. And, you know, even in the Playhems, right, the NA, Playhems, the reason I bring up Playhems is because that's pretty much the only consistent online event for NA players. And we had a bunch of these guys playing NA every week. And I remember watching, you know, Xenocider play almost every week, and obviously Scarlet, you know, she would play and she would win a bunch of them, and you know, that place is definitely it's a great competition for these folks to kind of, it's like a staging area, I guess, in a way that you could say. And but the thing is that, you know, nobody got any attention from those Playhems, and I'm not sure because of it was just because it was daily, and, you know, because it's daily, you just people just kind of bat a, you know, just they just kind of, it's just almost too much saturation. They just don't even look. But all you had were just like some small team managers looking every day. That's about it.
What I prefer about the weeklies is that you usually have a monthly final set on top of it.
Okay.
And with the monthly final, That's how you get the attention.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing which happens with Zotac. I know that Gopher StarCraft 2 had that in Europe. I'm pretty sure they had that at some point also in the US, but I'm 100% on this. So that's how you get the attention. Like, you win a few tournaments, or you participate in the tournaments over a series of months. You get your points, and then you participate in the offline, in the monthly final, and that's where you can suddly make a bit of a name
for yourself. Yeah, like a tournament.
If you're not known at all. I mean, if you're already on a big team or whatever, then it's a little bit of a different story. That's just for players that are really unknown and want to put themselves out there.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah, no, that's a good idea. Like, that's the one thing that they definitely didn't do, is just have this kind of tier, this kind of tournament championship type of thing.
That exists.
Oh, in Zotac, but not in Play-Am, though.
Yeah, but still, that's like the easiest thing that you can do.
Oh, I agree. I agree.
We actually had even European players start to participate on the North American server, because for some reason, the Americans weren't playing.
Yeah.
So that was the easiest way to get your points, to participate in the monthly final and maybe make money. So, I mean, that's really, as you guys already said, that's the grassroots level. What TB has been doing here is a completely different story. That's on a different scale. But it's just like, there are things that you can use as an American player that are not really used as much as they should.
Okay, so I can tell you, maybe if you were to ask an American player, why didn't they play the EU, like the Zotac and that stuff? You know, excuse number one is always going to be lag, right? So what do you...
They are on the North American server. There is no lag.
Oh, there are? Oh, okay. It's on the North American server. The Zotacs were on the North American server. That's true. Okay.
Like most of these tournaments, Gopher St. Tubin, they had the NA branch, was also hosted on the NA server.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, yeah. I was thinking Zotac EU for some reason. Okay.
I mean, but as I said, I mean, what TP is doing here is on a completely different scale.
Yes,
so it's just like, it's one of those things where you kind of feel that players could use what's there a little bit more. But I agree that right now the exposure of these things is very small, and if you don't make it to, let's say, to the monthly finals, and you don't want to put your time in for the weeklies, then it's definitely the better option to just try to hit one of those bigger tournaments.
Yeah And you know, one of the biggest things that people are talking about too is just that, is it good business, or is it, you know, having him, just him and Jenna do this? I mean, a lot of people are just looking at it more from the standpoint of it's just philanthropy in a way, right? I mean, or it's just an investment of something that they might not get a return for necessarily, or at least a direct return. I mean, growing the pie is obviously going to net more for, I think, everybody in the industry.
It's also amazing marketing. I didn't read his blog yet. I have to confess that was written while I was asleep, so I haven't read through all of this yet, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, his blog was mostly about just... It was mostly a postmortem of the entire thing. Very transparent, too, like I said. Like, he says everything. He pretty much tells you everything and kind of his thoughts on each thing. So, but anyways, I think that's probably enough to cover just with Shoutcraft. I think I'm very hopeful
just
that...
Just before you move on, Chris, I was wondering what you felt about... I talked on one of our previous shows about, you know, region locking, and one of the reasons that we were against region locking, you know, in was perhaps, or rather some people were against it, not necessarily us, were, you know, they didn't feel it would bring the viewing numbers. And I think what this tournament has definitely shown is that people will be interested in not just watching, you know, Koreans dominate each of the regions in WCS in the way that we've seen, and that perhaps the region locking thing could be something that would work and still bring the viewing figures.
For me, the biggest problem coming into this WCS season was that Blizzard's message and mission completely changed from what we've seen last year. Last year, the message was the entire time, local heroes, local heroes, local heroes. And now suddenly you had that we have like people traveling throughout the regions to participate in the region they perceive as the weakest one. And they showed last year already that you get the viewers when you have like a region locking. And I like it that they want to open it up a little bit, because that also allows... I mean, there are several aspects to it. There's like the Korean aspect to it. So it's a very in-depth topic, but just scratching at the surface a little bit and only
talking about
the regions itself. We have a position now where Blizzard basically rewards the best players no matter where they play. And I can get behind that. I was just a little bit confused that they changed like 180 degrees given what they said in the last year. I would like it, though, if they would put some kind of restriction on it, like that you have to at least live in the country, because I personally think that you should commit more to the region where you play in than they do right now. Every player only has to go there for like 2 weeks and then go back. I have no problem with Koreans participating in WCS and A or Euro, but I feel that they should live there for a certain amount of time at least to make it to make them participate in the region even more than they have to do right now.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think ideally it would be like they're an actual resident, you know, of like a resident or a citizen or whatever. I think ideally it is, but I think a good compromise is exactly what you're talking about. At least you have to live there for X period of time, and the period should be reasonable, right? It's tough because they have visas, you know. Like I think that's probably the main reason that they haven't made that restriction, because of just that aspect of it.
I don't know how the U.S. works with this regard. I mean, in most countries that I've been, you can just do visa runs and be on a tourist visa. You can't, like, work, but for players, it was never a problem. But with the U.S., it's probably a lot more difficult, so...
Yeah, I've heard some stories with just... It's not even Koreans, necessarily. Even some Europeans that have just had some, you know, just tough, like, very, very difficult visa situations, so...
That's a really good point.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that's the reason, and it would make sense, but... I'm still on the fence about what they're doing now, because I see why they're doing it. They're opening it up because, you know, they're kind of restricting Korea, right? With just given that they're having three regions and all three regions are equal, so they're kind of restricting Korea. So they're kind of opening up the rest of them, I think, just so they can facilitate at least what status quo was, right? And from the standpoint of Korea, it's because the Korean players that don't make it in Korea, they can go to the other regions and compete there, you know, and try to get in there. I kind of understand the logic behind that, but for me, it comes back to grassroots, and I know their initiative right now has nothing to do with grassroots. It's just all about producing just the best player, you know, just getting the best players to win this entire WCS thing. But for me, it's always been about building the other regions, because building the other regions builds the storylines even greater and just expands the breadth of this industry by... you know, like exponentially, hand, like it's crazy.
On the other hand, what do you have if you have like region, you know, I'm not talking about in America in general, but like all the other regions that you potentially have like last year.
Okay, sure.
What does it help you having one of those regions, then the player come to the finals and all of them are getting crushed in round one? That's like also one of the things. I feel one of the problems is...
That happens in every sport.
Talking a lot. Huh?
That happens in every sport. I mean,
it does, and that's the most boring part. I mean, I'm not... Soccer, for example, when you have a soccer World Cup, the first group stage is like the most boring thing ever. It's like, sometimes you have upsets, of course, that's like where storylines are basically being written.
That's how
but in 90% of it is just like the big names walking over the smaller teams.
No, so you're right from a viewing standpoint, but those small, you know, those small countries or whatever that are participating... they're getting better by even just being able to participate in on that stage, getting that exposure, and you know, and even for them, you know, getting to participate on that stage actually makes, you know, it improves their quality of life too within their country too. You know, I mean, there's a lot of added benefits that aren't just about the viewership, you know, of having a structure like that.
Yeah, I mean, I've always felt. Sorry, Tom. Go on.
No, you're the guest. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I've always felt that, you know, it kind of does seem a little bit counterintuitive to have this kind of model that they've got at the moment where, we all know Koreans dominate this game, but it's like, if we kind of all adhere to the idea of meritocracy that, you know, if you're the best, you deserve to be the best and have the opportunities that being the best affords you, then the people who aren't the best, they're never going to get the opportunities to catch up to the best and challenge the best. And, you know, I think your example about soccer is great, but everyone gets behind the underdogs. And when the underdogs do prevail, it might not be about the first time that they attend the big tournament, but about the second time, the third time. You know, sides like when you're at a World Cup, like Cameroon in Italia 90, which, you know, it was still quite rare for an African team to attend a major sporting event. And they got all the way to the semifinals and only lost narrowly to England. So, you know, incredible. Quarterfinals, I should say. So, you know, it's incredible to think about, you know, where they were, say, 20 years previous and to where they are now. And the only way you really progress in sports is by attending the bigger events and competing on the biggest, stage. So anything that prevents that might be great in terms of meritocracy, and let's all salute how great Koreans are, but all the other nations that want to play catch-up, and that would effectively expand the interest in StarCraft if we had a genuine contender from any other region, we're actually hampering that happening by not, you know, by allowing Koreans to dominate all the regions.
This is one thing. I mean, maybe I should probably have brought up soccer, because one of the problems that, or one of the big things that you have as a difference when you start talking about soccer is that is like regional by definition. You can't play that online. I mean, you can play FIFA, of course, but like the actual sport, can't play that online. Right. So there is a restriction to it that you have anyways. And like things like the World Cup give players a chance to compete on an international scale. But if you look at a game like Warcraft or like StarCraft, doesn't really matter, like each and every online game, this restriction is very artificial. So the players have the chance to compete and to put their name out there. And if it means that the players that are currently in any country, being it the US, being it like Germany or any other European country, are not good enough to compete on that scale, then maybe you are just a player that has the right to play in the Challenger League because you're simply not good enough. Then you have to be content with that and step up your game. And there are a lot of aspects to it. I mean, Katz, for example, has been talking a lot about how having the region without Koreans would be a huge motivation to the players, how you can set up the marketing a little bit better, how you can actually use the team house. They do that now with the help of their fans. But there are like aspects like to both sides. So there's no one that is really right or is really wrong. This is just the way that Blizzard decided to go down this year. They said, okay, we know there are several ways to approach it, but this is the one that we feel is the best these days. Because you look at the Koreans and the commitment they have to that game, and a lot of the players being like really, really good, but never getting the exposure because they are not like top tier, but they're maybe even in, maybe only round of 32 Code S, but that in alone is such a huge achievement that now they get the chance to not only win money, but get the exposure outside of Korea a lot more easily than it was before. So,
no, it's okay. So it's good that we're transitioning into this topic, because that's one of the topics that I have further down here with just talking about WCS in Korea. You know, I think you're right, and you're, you know, that for me, again, it has more to do with growth than the actual. It's kind of crazy because I'm gonna, this might ruffle some feathers, but it's not about the fairness of it all.
Dude, I completely understand you. I mean, there are like two sides to it. On the one hand, you want to build like a region. On the other hand, you also want to say, okay, the best players should get more. There is no right or wrong. I feel there's just which of the two pays you agree more with.
Yeah, I mean, sure, but like one solution, you know, like if they're both scales, right? One solution is definitely more skewed than the other, because whenever you do like the current model, and you know, of course Blizzard's doing what they're doing. I'm going to be supporting that no matter what. Okay, that's just, of course I support, you know, StarCraft 2. So this is all just for the sake of discussion. But what they're doing right now for me is like, it's like if there's a scale that's grassroots and there's a scale that's just rewarding the best players, it's like this. It's like 99-1, you know, kind of thing. And then if they were doing the opposite, the best players would still probably get there. I mean, we saw the best players in the finals last year. Like, we still saw them there. And so the best players will still be rewarded in the end, even if they did more of a regional type of setup. So, and the grassroots would obviously be helped to a great scale. So it's like more balanced as to like the benefits that are gained from that structure.
You know what I'm missing in StarCraft, and I never can really figure out why we don't have this. In Warcraft, we had such a huge community that was playing. Like, we had, for example, so many different team leagues that didn't even have prize money. People that were just playing in their free time after school with a few friends would just join up, form a team, playing these leagues. And at the lower leagues, there were a lot of problems because some people would just not show up to the team matches. Then you had a lot of free wins. And that was always a bit of a problem. But then you had like these premier leagues where you could maybe win for the winning team like $100, like 200, 500, whatever. And these days you could even get more for that. And in those teams, you had like really good players. And the professional teams looked at those leagues a little bit and always had an eye on them and were like, okay, if there's like a really good player that suddenly emerges, we might actually just get him into our team. And that gave like players a lot of exposure before they became professional. They were playing on a free time basis, had the talent, were good, and then there was suddenly someone coming up and asking him, hey, do you want to give it a shot? And I know that Katz has been doing that with a lot of players that he meets on ladder, but I don't think that there is really like this lower level of play. There are a few things that you have in the US
The CSL yeah, exactly. is definitely one of the things.
Yeah, but it's not on that such a big scale where it should be, and that's always a little bit surprising to me, because even in Warcraft 3 we had such a huge base, and that doesn't exist in StarCraft, and I could never really figure out why that is, suddenly is.
Well, I mean, I think it has...
I don't know if it's anything to do with streaming now being such an important part of things. I mean, because, like, you're absolutely right. In Europe, what we've got is, I mean, every major organization has an academy system, right? So if we see prospective talent as an organization, we feel no pressure in going out, picking it up, giving it the academy tag so it doesn't reflect bad on us if they tank or whatever. And then
also
we
makes them demand less money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, that's true.
You can pay an academy player in, you know, magic beans. So that's always a bonus, right? So yeah, we give them an academy tag. They feel great because they've just got, you know, a Fnatic tag or a Four Kings tag or whatever it is. You know, and the organization loses nothing. But now that we've transitioned into the era where every player almost has to be justifiable, and they justify themselves in terms of presence and streaming numbers. You know, why would anyone... If you could have the choice of picking up someone who might be a really good talent in 6 months, or someone who's already plateaued and is never going to do anything but has a cult following because they make animal noises while they're playing or whatever, and you're going to get 5,000 people watching a stream, you're going to go for that guy over the prospective talent every time.
Yeah, I mean, those are really good points. I mean, I think streaming and just people's viewing behavior, and it being very habitual, is a big part of this, because all the big names they're always going to be big names, you know, because everybody is like that example you gave yesterday, Richard. It's like a firework kind of observation, you know, when people are looking at fireworks, everybody's just going to go and watch what everybody else is watching type of mentality, and because of that, and because of saturation of all this content right now. I think the only way that you can succeed in setting up this kind of, just call it like the minor league staging, it's just staging area or whatever you want to call it, it has to be structured. And it has to be structured like something like the CSL is, the Collegiate StarCraft League. I mean, it has to be something that presents its own product to the community, and it's not necessarily measured upon the professional scene, right? And they did a good job of it, and it's going to continue to grow, I think, as long as it gets the proper funding and stuff like that. But as long as there's some, you know, hybrid pro players or pro part-time pro players like Suppy involved with it, then you're going to get a little bit of that kind of marketability too with these leagues. And I think that's the only way you can succeed with that these days, because that's just how the viewers are right now. They're just going to flock towards the professionals every single time. Okay, let's see. I think that's going to be good for the WCS. Why don't we talk a little bit about just you and just kind of your life in Korea, Kaldor, and lots of the videos you've been making lately. I know have been just about things around Korea. You know, just the things you're just kind of showing us around Korea recently, which is kind of cool. Yep. And you know, some of them are more, you know, are dealing with some bigger issues like racism and that sort of thing. So talk to us about just your experience right now in Korea, and do you think you'll be staying there for even longer periods?
I will usually take it 1 year at a time, so I will definitely stay for the duration of this year, and then we'll see. Then I have to talk to Gorman of what exactly the plans are for the next year and if I want to stay. I don't really want to, like, settle down in Korea and get a wife and kids here. I definitely don't want to raise kids in Korea. That's the last thing I want to do.
Ouch.
Because... No, like, the system here is really, in a lot of things, very different from just from the Western world, and not in a good way. I don't really like that. I would never raise kids here. Like, okay. In that system, that is, I don't really think that's a good thing. The whole thing, the age thing, if you're older, you're always right. If you are up high up in the hierarchy, you are right, for example. And all these things that really limits you, I feel. But in general, I like it here. It's pretty awesome. I want to stay a little bit longer. I can certainly see myself staying for another 2 or 3 years. And I was actually, like you mentioned, the videos with the surroundings here where I live and stuff. I was really surprised how much attention that got. I mean, I could understand it when I did the video on the racism thing. Mm-hmm. I was very surprised about how mature the discussion was, because I personally thought I would be ripped to shreds on Reddit and on YouTube because of it. I was like, okay, everyone holds Korea as this perfect country, yeah, which has no flaws whatsoever. So if I suddenly talk about something that is not perfect, that is actually like bad, then I will get so much hate. And that never happened.
No, like, it was great. It was amazing.
I didn't want to post this on Reddit. I actually asked a friend of mine. I was like, should I actually like put a link up there? And she's like, yeah, why not? And I'm like, well, I don't really think that's going to help at all. And that's probably going to get it downloaded to oblivion. And then it ends up being the top post in Reddit for over a day. I was like so surprised, mm-hmm, by the feedback. So,
well, I mean, getting to hear the real side, getting to see and hear the real side of what it's like to be in Korea, we don't get a chance to see that much, honestly, in the West here. So I think that's why it got so many views and why it's so compelling. And, you know, you're in a unique position to even do that, right? And even the interviews that you do over there have been so great with the players. You know, like when Scarlet was over there and you were doing those first interviews with her, right? I mean, those were great. That's such great content, you know? So
just trying to get a little bit of a better equipment, because with some of the videos I had to be, I hate to pass a microphone between the players or between the interviewers. Yeah. I really hate that. It's so annoying. I did it, I think, in the last one that I did with Violet, but I want to get it a different microphone for my camera, like a shotgun mic. And I'm currently ordering the things to improve on those a little bit. Mm-hmm. But the videos in Korea, in the area, just showed me that apparently there is a demand. Like, people want to know what Korea looks like. So I'll definitely upload a lot of them. I wanted to do that like last week, and then the weather got all shitty at the weekend.
That sucks.
Well, I don't really want to upload a video where everything is just like cloudy and it's raining, and I'm like, yeah, okay, that doesn't make sense, but I will definitely do that.
So the people around you look at you like you're crazy whenever you're doing these videos?
Did you see the Shinrin video? It was so funny. The girls at the end of the video, at the very end, it was like the cutest thing ever. it's the last video just blew me away.
Which one is this?
It's like the last few seconds, and I was walking around with a camera in like one arm, and I had my microphone in the other one. I was walking around. I got a couple of looks, and there were two things that were just really amazing. There's that one in the middle, yeah. The first thing was like in the middle of one of the malls, there was a guy, like a foreigner, walking towards me, and usually there are no, it's right at the end. Like,
it's right at the end? Okay, just go straight to the end.
So, I think that's her.
Here is the Shinrin
Day! She was adorable. She was perfect. That was so cool. So that was the second thing that happened. So I was already done with the video, okay? And that is me on my way back. And suddenly these two girls just basically jump in front of the camera. And she's like, oh, I want to get filmed. And I'm like, okay, no problem. So I put the camera up again. And she starts speaking in English to me. And I'm like, what? Why do you speak English?
Because
in Korea, nobody speaks English. It's so difficult to find someone here who has like a decent English. But a lot of the children are now taught like at least the basic English. So she had a few words. I gave her the microphone as well, and she recorded the cutest clip ever. It was so adorable. And then you have this geeky friend of her at the side with those big glasses and like just putting the microphone of the mobile phone there. It was adorable. It was so awesome. So they reacted immediately when they saw that I have a camera, and they were so excited when they heard that I'm actually going to upload this video on the internet. And another guy, like the guy that I met in the mall, which I was talking about earlier, so he sees me walking with the camera, and I think he waved or went for a peace sign or whatever. So I just talked about it for a second and walked away. And I arrive in my apartment like 10 minutes later, and I just check all my sites, and I have a few tweets. And one of the tweets is from him. He's actually German, lives in Korea, recognized who I was, waved the camera, and then tweeted me immediately. Was like, sorry, I hope I didn't disrupt your video or the recording, but I just had to go for it. And it just blew me away. It was like, what the hell? You meet a random guy in Seoul, which is like 12 million people living there, and the guy knows who you are.
Well, you're like the only European that's living in Seoul. That's what it means, man.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you've got quite a distinctive look, considering the people in Seoul as well. So I think you'd be quite, you know, recognizable on the street, for example.
It was so funny. I mean, so a few people definitely, like, react when you're walking around with a camera, but you just have to shake that. I mean, I probably look really weird. The reason why I have this microphone, I'm actually talking while I'm walking, because I feel that is a little bit better for what I talk about. So I have like a 3-meter cable that is wrapped around my body. I have the camera in one hand and the microphone in the other. And it looks really, really weird. So yeah, people sometimes stare a little bit, but I know. I don't realize it anymore, I think.
That's funny.
I mean, I think what's really great about the videos you've done, I've watched all the stuff you've done, you know, kind of on Korea, is just that in esports, we're told so much about Korea, and there's a lot of mythologizing about what it's like. And I think one of the reasons that people have found it so interesting to see what you're doing is because it lifts the veil. You know, most people, we get told all this stuff. You know, I've never been there. I've been reporting in esports for a decade, still never been to Korea. I've got a lot of friends who go out there and they're always telling me, you know, similar stuff to what I've seen in your videos, you know, that it isn't necessarily how we think it is. And there are some issues there, and that there are some cultural differences, but not just of the kind that people like to stereotype about. So it's been very interesting and yeah, educational, I would say, as well, to a lot of people who, you know, are told so much, like, kind of misinformation about Korea and what it's like out there. So, you know, it was a real eye-opener for me, especially the whole racism thing, which I thought was, you know, very brave. I can totally understand you being apprehensive about wanting to bring that to the table because, you know, what it, you know, as you say, with the mythologizing, you know, I'd have thought, wow, he's going to get skinned alive for saying this. But,
yeah, same.
Yeah, but, you know, in actual fact, it sparked a very mature discussion, and it was very illuminating for me, you know, someone who's never been there.
Yeah, it was just important. I tried to point that out in the video that I love being here. It's just people have been asking me constantly, what are things that you like, what are the things that you don't like? And what kind of sparked the video, I was thinking about that for a long time, to do something like this. Naniwa actually tweeted at me after I published the video, and he told me, we've been talking about this for like ages now. I can't believe that you actually like went live on camera with that. But I had this I talk about the incident in the video, that one guy when I recorded another block in the cafe, and he suddenly started this, you talk English, shut the fuck up, and don't talk in a language I don't understand. And that was the point. I got so angry at that guy because he also ruined my recording. And I got so mad that I'm like, okay, fuck it, I'm going to record it tomorrow. I was really mad today.
The catalyst. Like.
Oh, yeah, that was the last straw. I was like, okay.
But, I mean, I've talked to Johan about, you know, Naniwa, about his time out there as well. And, you know, we talk, you know, frequently on Skype. It's no secret I'm a big fan of his. And how he, you know, he's talked about when he was out there, and he made it sound like he was just so alienated, and it was very lonely, and especially from a competitive standpoint with everything he had to do. Like, he made it sound like it was actually quite an unhappy time, like it was something he had to force himself to endure because he wanted to improve his game so much and knew that to do it, he had to be there. And I think that's one aspect. Like, people look at it as being quite a glamorous thing. Like, when you hear about a player going out to career or a caster going out to career, it's going to be such a glamorous and wonderful thing. In actual fact, it sounds like it's quite a big decision and can have some, you know, consequences from kind of you know, a personal perspective, you know, how you end up feeling while you're out there.
There's one aspect that, especially for players that stay in team houses, is important, and that doesn't affect all of them, but that's important quite a lot, and also was one of the reasons for Naniwa. I'm not saying that's all that he was talking about there. The conflict management here basically doesn't really exist. So let's say, for example, I live in a team house in Europe or in America, and I get angry one day, or I realize something is wrong. Someone has a problem with me. So I go up to the person and I'm like, hey, dude, what the fuck? Something's like a little bit off here. And he just tells me, okay, you've been a douche here and there. I didn't like what you did there, and I really hated that. Gets a little bit mad. Maybe we shout at each other. But if we are like semi-mature after that, it will be all right. We will talk about it. We will solve the issue, and problem resolved. Done. Doesn't happen in Korea. In Korea, you ask the guy what's wrong, and he won't tell you. He will lie to your face, and like the saving face thing that they have here, and tell you, no, everything's completely fine. I just didn't have time, like, to talk to you, or come up with 1,000 excuses, but just not admit that there is actually like a problem. That's very Korean culture, that this conflict management doesn't really take place in such a way. So you get very frustrated because you know there's a problem, but you don't know how to fix it, and you don't know what exactly you have to fix. And that is where you can get very, very alienated, especially when you are a player. I mean, Naniwa in can be very difficult. I mean, he doesn't deny that. Nobody would deny that. No. So if you live with players and at some point you get like angry or mad or whatever and you act in a European or in a Western way, then you might offend people. And they might take that a little bit more to heart than someone from America or Europe would do, because we have a very more outgoing culture than the Koreans. And you might just insult someone without actually like knowing it. And if you don't find out about it later on and don't know what's wrong, it's very hard to fix that. And then you get alienated very, very fast, because it's just like everyone is kind of ignoring you, or you are being left all on your own. It's already difficult enough as it is to find other like English speakers that you can talk to on a daily basis, especially when you're in a team house, because they're not in the center of Seoul. They're all a little bit outside. And yeah, so for players, it can be really difficult. Not for all of them, but it depends on the type, of course.
How often do you guys, all you foreigners over there, get together? You know, like with Artosis and Tasteless and just, you know, even Scarlet and all those, you know, just whoever's over there right now.
It depends a little bit. With Dan, I was going to the gym for quite a long time. He's been skipping out now for about a month. He's always telling me that he's going to make a comeback pretty soon.
Of course.
He don't probably will. He was really meticulous about going, so I feel that he's probably doing that. He had a lot of stuff to do, and apparently he was sick the last 10 days or whatever. But so usually I would see him basically on a daily basis. Wolf always for the cast, sometimes outside of it. It's not like we have like a day of the week where we all just meet up, but depending on what exactly happens. Like Dan has a kid, of course, so it's a little bit different for him. And I have to admit that I don't go out and get like drunk as often as the other guys. I don't, with my training and everything, I don't really, that doesn't do anything for me. Might be too old, I don't know. But yeah, but we usually like meet quite frequently.
Okay, very cool. So let's talk a little bit about work in Korea. And obviously, I think that the jump that you made from just your work in Europe, you know, to Korea was a huge, I mean, it was such a great opportunity for you to work with Yom, right? And you've been doing a great job this entire time. So talk to me a little bit about your decision now just to stay with Yom. Obviously, you don't have to say much about you working for Yom. Obviously, that's just an amazing experience. I mean, I think any cast would want to work with Yom. But do you have any fears of leaving Yom, you know, and coming back to the Western, like just to EU, for instance, and maybe not having opportunities? Do you have any feelings like that where, I mean, it's a little bit of inertia at this point. Like, you just don't want to leave the situation because the unknown is...
Not really. Every time my contract was up with Yom, I had other offers from Europe, from the US, where I could have gone and could have continued what I'm doing. But I also have a degree. So even when at some point it turns out that for whatever reason, I can't make a living from working in esports anymore, I could always fall back on that. So that's something that is just a safety net that I have. But in general, that's not an issue. I mean, there are so many opportunities, especially now with WCS, that you have not only like GSL in Korea, but you have leagues everywhere in the world that just increase the opportunities for casters to work wherever they want to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good. So I guess you can see yourself just working for Gone as long as they want you for the next 2 or 3 years for the most part?
For the next 2 or 3 years, yeah. That's definitely like a time frame where I could see myself working here. It depends a little bit on what they plan on doing next year. But so far, they were pretty happy with Wing and they seem to really like the setup. They were a little bit concerned when Moldrub left that we would need another caster for Code A, because the caster switching and the rotation that they had in Code A was always something that was, for them, I don't want to say important, but it gave them a certain wiggle room. Like, so many casters would only stay here for 3 months and then leave, take the opportunity and then just go home and never intended to stay for long term. And they really needed the safety of having like a really... not only the working team, but also the safety that if one caster suddenly decides, you know, guys, you know what, tomorrow I'll leave, that they can just fall back onto others to cast everything. But back then we decided that we want to do it like the two of us, that the rotation is not something that we really enjoy, that the viewers also don't enjoy, because it's very difficult for us to like get the teams going. It's always a little bit weird adapting to the other person. Then you don't have as many stays with one particular caster that you can really form a certain like team atmosphere between them and get your timings right. So ever since then, we've have this one team for Code A and GSTL, and then Nick and Dan, of course, for Code S. And I feel that worked out very, very well. So right now, they're pretty happy with us. And as long as I don't have a reason to leave, I'll probably stay here.
Yeah. Okay.
Do GOM treat you like the jewel in the crown? I've always wondered about this because obviously, you know, you've got that European air about you, and it's like the relationship. No, seriously, the relationship when it comes to casters just across esports in general is North Americans seem to love Europeans, Europeans seem to love North Americans. So I didn't know what it was like kind of making the transition when you go out to say somewhere like Korea. Like, is it, you know, red carpet and lots of bowing and scraping for you?
No, not at all. What I found very funny was when I arrived and we agreed on me staying for 2 or 3 months and just basically looking what would happen. And I remember that at the second day, or was it the third day, when I was in Korea, one of the first things that I did was going to the studio when they had the first cast, and I met with Mr. Che for the first time in person. We've been talking over emails so far. And he asked me immediately, before my first cast, if I wanted to stay longer. And I'm like, what? okay, I guess, yeah, I would like to do that. But before I had my first cast or anything, this trial basically ended. And I'm like, okay. So, like, yeah, I want to have a little bit of a look at how it would work within the next few weeks. But if there's nothing that is not okay for you guys or for me, I would certainly like to stay. So that was pretty funny. I liked that. But in general, I feel for me it was very difficult to transition at the beginning to like casting on in English on a regular basis. People underestimate a little bit how much harder it is to cast English compared to having a conversation with other people in a different language, because you always can take a bit of a break, you can have a pause, and you can think about what you're saying next. But when you cast, you talk so much faster, and everything has to be spot on. So at the beginning, that was not easy, and I had a very limited vocabulary. I'm still not happy with my English cast. I know that it has been going a bit better, but I have so many things where I just realize that I have certain phrases that I repeat, that I'm thinking about, let's say, a German proverb that fits the situation like perfect. And I know if that was a German cast and I say that, everyone would just start laughing and people would love it. But then I don't know, does that translate to English? Can I translate that word by word? Because that works with some proverbs, but not with all of them.
Yeah,
and if I don't know the English saying, suddenly you get a little bit like, it's really difficult to make that. So,
yeah. Lost in translation, yeah, definitely. But
I feel it's been getting better, but I'm not like, I still know that there's a lot of things to improve with it.
Okay. You know, it's one thing that we ask all the casters that have been to Korea. You know, we had Moltrap on here like months ago, and one of the things we asked him too was, when it comes to casting jobs, do you see there being like this hierarchy, like and Korea maybe being at the top of it? You know, casting Code S or you know WCS Korea now. Do you see that sort of hierarchy or no? Is there a pinnacle basically to casting?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, casting, this is the most prestigious and by far the best league in the entire world. So casting that is like a dream come true. I differentiate between tournaments and leagues because a tournament is very different from the entire setup and also from the time you have to put in and also from the casting in itself. But if it comes to like leagues or the most prestigious things in the world, I would never trade GOM for anything else. But when it comes down to like tournaments, there are a few tournaments where you always want to go just because you have a good relationship with the people working there and you have had good experience in the past. So, I mean, MLGs is always awesome. You have DreamHacks, which are great, ASUS, ROG. I can't say that I had like a lot of casting gigs offline that I didn't like. There were a few where things were a bit shaky, but mostly that was not really a fault of the organizer. That was just sometimes shit happens. Sounds like it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because does that mean all the casters in Korea are the best casters in the world then?
No, I didn't say that. Not necessarily. That basically, track who's the best caster or not, that's a matter of personal preference. Yeah, right. And especially, I have quite strong opinions, and I have no problem voicing them. So I know that I have a lot of fans, but at the same time, I also have a lot of haters. People who, no matter what I do, no matter what I put out there in terms of content or casting, say, the guy is a fucking douchebag and I hate him. And he's a stupid asshole and should disappear from the scene.
That doesn't sound familiar at all. I mean, that happens to everybody.
Not really. There are a few casters that don't really put themselves out there. And they don't participate in the community at all, being it like YouTube videos, comments on Reddit, being it Team Liquid or whatever. They don't really participate in anything. So if you don't put yourself out there, you might be viewed as a solid caster, but you don't really have this personality. And from the beginning of Warcraft, I've always tried to just work with, to just grow the community. I mean, I didn't start out as a caster. I started out as an admin, as a moderator in a forum, and then started to become an admin in a tournament, was the webmaster of the biggest website, that community website that we had in Germany. And it just, I took one step after another because I wanted to give back and grow the community with the people that I was working with at the time. And right now I don't have as many responsibilities as I had back then, but I have a lot more influence. So if I write something on a forum, it usually, like a lot of people will say, okay, I value his opinion just because I'm living in Korea and casting here. So I usually try to get involved in the community as well if I can. And that's something that a lot of casters don't do anymore because of the feedback and because of how the community kind of reacts. But at the same time, it gives you also the safety that you don't get as much hate. So there's an up and a downside.
So net gain, is it better for you? I mean, just putting aside just your personal preference, you know, to contributing to the community or not, net gain, is it positive for being, you know, interactive with the community?
No idea. I have
no, really?
I don't think about it in that way. It's not about gaining anything.
It isn't, but it's just, it's more of just an objective view on it.
I actually don't know. A lot of times when I talk on a forum and people don't seem to understand what I'm saying, or like try to read between lines where there is nothing to read in between,
right,
and you start getting into an argument, then I'm always looking at it and I'm like, why did I start this in the first place? Why do I post here? Why do I do this? I mean, there are obviously people that try to twist everything that I'm saying right now and don't seem to try to understand my point.
Well, that's their way of getting attention, you know what I mean? Like these,
I guess, but that's the times when I think, why am I here in the first place? Why do I do this? So it can be very frustrating. And I don't know. It's not about gaining anything or not.
No, I agree with that. It's just, again, it was just more of an objective type of question, just to see if, you know, maybe some people, you know, it's a bit more contrived, you know, if they do it or not. You know, it's more of a decision that they make to participate and have this sense, have this kind of image, right? That you're a community person too, right? As well as a caster, you could see that. So
it's just you have to make sure that you kind of ignore the idiots. I had people writing me messages on Twitch that said, "I really hope that North Korea starts a war with South Korea that you are one of the first ones to die."
See, that's
like
just...
that was like, and the guy wrote me like a completely set of messages and stuff like that is what you get all the time if you put your name out there. And if you don't participate in anything and you're just sticking to your casting things, that usually doesn't happen because there's no reason to hate you. People can hate you for your casting, for example, but if you don't put your name out there, besides the casting itself, there's nothing for people to target.
Yeah, but then again, there's more to love about you too if you have, you know, if you feel...
Yeah, but I think the thing is most people that are, you know, operating in any kind of image... you know, and personality kind of based industry, we all know that it's best to just appeal to as many people across the board. So there's so many casters right now, I feel, deliberately shave off their spiky edges, or if they've got an opinion about something that they know is going to be not controversial, but divisive. Even if it's a 50-50 divide, that's 50% of people, you know, that aren't going to be warming to you. And people in esports can be quite vicious and vociferous, you know, when anyone has an opinion about anything. So I do understand why people do it, but I think it's great to see people like yourself that don't shy away from it. And I wonder if we're about to start seeing a change in that trend, you know, with people like Idra moving into casting and stuff, you know, the whole idea of him suddenly coming out and being all PC and trying to find the happy medium to gain more viewers is just absurd. So hopefully we can start pushing the big personality casters to the forefront.
Well, you know, my big thing with, you know, people not saying their opinions, you know, in the community forums, and you know, and there have been times where I definitely just have not posted something, even though I felt strongly about something, just because of all those reasons you're talking about, just putting yourself out there kind of thing. My biggest issue is that, you know, we need leaders, right, in this community. You know, we need people that do feel strongly about things to speak out about it, because, like we were talking about, Shoutcraft America with TB, I mean, they, you know, the influential people can get shit done, you know, and for me, that's what, you know, that's why I, like, I would, even though there is a lot of hate that can go your way because of it, I think overall, like, the community definitely needs, you know, needs these influential people to make things happen, you know.
And it's not just that, Chris. I mean, sometimes what we never give any credit to is sometimes being the guy that's vocal, even though you're completely fucking wrong, is valuable. You know, like, if a guy says, well, I don't think we should do this, and the whole community come out and go, fuck you, man. Yeah, we should totally do this. But that dialogue wasn't happening before that. Mm-hmm. You know, they've served a very valid function. You know, they've served something important because they've galvanized the community behind a belief or a mindset that they maybe weren't collectively aware they all shared prior to uniting against the person that said we should do the opposite thing. So we shouldn't shout those people down, you know, the dissenting voices. We should absolutely embrace them because they do serve a valid function. And I'm not just saying that because it's usually me.
One of the things for example, Korea says a little bit is like leading by example is just something that should happen more in the community. You usually see bigger personalities say something when they like disagree. Like, for example, one thing that that we've been doing a little bit more in Code A, and people have been noticing that, and some of them told us, okay, I hate that, and others like that. A lot of players have been complaining in the past that they don't get exposure, and that especially casters don't give them as much exposure as they deserve. So we usually try to plug a couple of Twitters every single time we cast Code A to give the players that exposures. And yes, we also at the same time plug our own, but still we look up all those Twitter accounts. We talk about the players and talk about these things to give them that exposure. What never happened, not even once, is a player actually like, you know, to play, if a player doesn't like something about you, they will immediately tweet about it and try to like single you out, especially when they feel they can attack you. Nobody is stupid enough to like attack Day9 or attack like someone else, even when they disagree, because they feel like, well, these guys are so loft. If I actually say something like publicly against them, I will get ripped to shreds by the community. But when they feel that they are more popular than you are, they will feel the privilege to like attack you. But nobody actually said like, I love what these guys are doing. And that is very annoying to me. Like, you can't, on the one hand, bitch about it in the past, and then when it actually happens, not acknowledge it.
Yeah.
That's something where you should, if you want to change, then you should be the person who complains about it once. And once it changes, you should actually single out those guys that do what you wanted so that you can show other people, okay, this is how it should be. And that's something that players in particular don't do. And that's also true for casters, by the way. So that's not only – that's true for everyone. I mean, that's also true for myself.
Well, it's an egotistical thing, right? I mean, it's not necessarily – I don't know. For me, I think it has a lot to do with ego sometimes because, yeah, a lot of people are quick to criticize, but there's not a lot of people that are good at praising people, right, I think, for the most part. And our industry is a perfect example of that. You do have players that do. I mean, there are some players that do, right?
I mean, that was just generalizing it. There are a few players that do it, but it's just like you have the part of them that complain about something is a lot bigger. And this is, in my opinion, because a lot of players especially think that like casters don't deserve anything. That is like a topic that I could talk about like for hours. It's like this...
Should I get you and Naniwa on a show and talk about? Maybe not you.
No, we had like really long discussions about this, and on a lot of points I agree with him. The problem is you always talk about players and you talk about casters, but you have to differentiate. A lot of players, for example, are fucking lazy. they have no discipline and they don't train nearly as much as people think they are. But then if you say that, you can't say that because there are other players that really put a lot of time and effort into it. Mm-hmm. And they might not get those results, but they have a good work ethic and they try, and they try really hard, and they deserve everything that they get. So in both like camps, in the caster camp and the player camp, you have people who, in my personal opinion, don't deserve what they have, and you have other people who completely deserve everything that they have, and another set of people that is completely undervalued because they don't get the attention they should get. So it's just a lack of differentiation when these discussions actually happen. Nobody wants to call out certain names, doesn't matter in like what, because what do you have to gain if you single someone out? There's like nothing. Mm-hmm. It's like nobody will tell you, okay, that is awesome that you pointed this person out. Everyone, all the fans of that person will just jump on you immediately. There's nothing to gain, but only a lot to lose in a discussion like this.
I think what a lot of people think, and I can identify with this because it's certainly a mistake I've made earlier on in my esports career, is if you're the guy who comes out and like calls somebody out, you think there's going to be all the people who dislike him and kind of agree with you. We're going to rally up behind you and go, yeah, fuck that guy. And you turn around and there's no one there. And what you're faced with is like the wall of all the fans of that guy, as you say, like really, you know, aggressively defending him. And no one's going to back you up because for all the reasons you've just said. So you absolutely don't gain anything. And I generally think you have to be a lot more subtle these days if you want to kind of subvert the community around your way of thinking. I think people are getting a lot cleverer than just saying, I oppose that person's viewpoint, because if they have got that traction, you know, you're on a hiding and nothing really. No one's gonna get on board.
That's why it's, you know, that's why it's such a complex thing. Just this whole community behavior, you know, it's
for me the bottom line is just like, when no matter who's talking about people in general, if you talk about casters, if you talk about players, if you talk about anything else, doesn't do justice. There is not the casters, there's not the players, there's not the admins. It's always like individual persons that you need to talk about. So if you have a problem with something, you need to address the actual issue and not try to hide behind a generalization, because there are like people all over in esports that do a lot. There are others that do very little. What I, for example, found very sad is we had the problems with WCS and A, just to take one example.
Yeah.
WCSNA had a few problems, and a few of the admins, for example, got so much hate. I can't remember when I last time saw a post on Reddit or anywhere else where people were just rallying behind and saying, thanks to all the admins putting in their free time without getting any money at all, because admins are the people that are in general being shat on the entire time. If you are an admin that works in a tournament, what happens from the first round is that people blame you for what happens. You are the big asshole and you just get flamed the entire day. Nobody realizes that you are there. And if you make a perfect job, nobody will give you any credit at all. It's just like, yeah, you did your job. Oh, you don't get paid for it. Well, that's your problem. But if you make a big mistake, then people immediately jump on you. And it's a bit different if you're in a big organization, because then you probably get paid. But That's a group of people within esports that doesn't get any attention at all. And some of them do a great job and put in a ton of time.
Yeah, it's definitely a thankless job. I mean, any job where
when
it's
when are you
like
going to do your special show, Chris?
Which one?
About admins.
About admins?
That's what we need, the admin appreciation.
I'll let John lead that one. John's perfect.
You did the map-making community.
Yeah,
you know, you've
exactly.
tried to reach out and be all things to all men. And you don't give a fuck about admins, do you, Chris? Let's be honest.
But that doesn't really interest people. True. That's the problem. Like, that's something you can't get. That's not a draw. And that's a sad part about this.
Oh, you think map-making is a draw, dude? I mean, come on, dude.
All of them are the admin. Or people affected by the admins you've got on the show. Like, they made a bad decision or a coin toss if we were talking about DreamHack or whatever, you know. But it might be an idea. I think these guys definitely do need some appreciation. I've done it. I've admin tournaments. It sucks.
Yeah. I mean, there's some big-name admins, too. I mean, it's definitely a thankless job. Definitely. Because it's one of those jobs that's just expected to go right. So people just, you know, they don't understand how much work it goes into it. And they just... You know, it's one of those things. You just notice when things go wrong, right? And unfortunately, you know, a lot of times they are volunteers. So a lot of times, you know, it's like this discussion I've had with John many times, that like, how can you expect quality if you know, a lot of the people are volunteers? And I appreciate them them spending, you know, giving up their free time to do this, for sure. But, you know, there is some level of quality that has to be done. But I, you know, they are definitely underappreciated, no doubt about it. So, you know, can't disagree with you at that point. I don't know when we do an admin show, okay, Richard? So, like, don't be promising that right now. But it's definitely no, along
I'm
the
gonna
lines
I'm going to make that promise
things.
On your behalf, Chris. Admins, if you're out there, get in touch with us.
Oh, shit.
Tweet to Chanman.
There's so
on,
many
on
admins, too. I'm going to get, like 100 messages. Oh,
tweet to him and tell him why there should be an admin special.
Exactly. Well,
but
okay.
Don't tweet to me.
Don't tweet to him, of course not. Okay, so I know there's a lot of people questions out here. Why don't we start some Q&A? You guys cool with that?
Sure.
And if you guys want to call in, go ahead and just add me on Skype. Skype's Chanman V, and I will pull you into the call, and you can ask your questions live. Otherwise, just type them in the stream chat, and we'll ask them from there. Let's see if we see anything. Richard, you take a look too, man, just in case I miss something.
Yeah, yeah, I'm filtering through at the moment. I'm going to have to get right close to my monitor because I haven't got my glasses on. I try and keep alpha as fuck and not wear my glasses when I'm on stream.
Exactly.
Not that there's anything non-alpha
about getting LASIK for a long time right now. So many Korean players got it, and yeah, just a little bit scared. But basically, like, I think MC got LASIK, Squirtle got LASIK, and another player. I asked Squirtle where exactly he got it because I wanted to get it at the same time, and he turns around and is like, oh, I'm sorry, I got it in Busan. And I'm like, ah. So, yeah, I'm not going to Busan for that.
Oh, man. So, you know, speaking of the whole North Korea thing, like, how has it affected just everything over there?
If I wouldn't have known that there is a North Korea thing through reading, like, the international
news.
International news, I wouldn't have known.
Oh, okay.
Like,
right.
On the street here, like, the one thing that I always compared it to, even though it's something completely different, when I was in New Zealand for the last time in Christchurch, they had a snowstorm coming, and that is unheard of in New Zealand. So suddenly they had like these panic shoppings where people were storming the supermarkets and you couldn't buy anything anymore because everyone was just like worried, oh my God, we're going to die. In the end, they had like 1 or 2 centimeters of snow. That's it. Nothing more happened. But that's what they had. And then, so if something like this can already trigger, like, not a panic, but people being worried, you would think a dude that lives 200 kilometers away from you threatening to throw a nuclear missile on your head would kind of get a reaction. But there was nothing going on here. You could see it in the news, but if you don't understand, like, Korean well enough to follow the news, you would have had no idea that there was actually a threat. People were just going on with their daily lives, and they are a little bit used already, apparently, to North Korea every couple of years acting tough and trying to muscle them around a little bit. So they were just going on and were like, well, we can't change anything anyway, so why get worried here? Let's just continue what we're doing, and when worse comes to worse, we'll take it from there.
Fair enough. Let's see.
We've had a surprising amount of questions about Warcraft, actually.
Yeah, well,
we did.
You know, Calorize, obviously his origins come from...
Oh, yeah, Warcraft. And I'm not surprising in terms of the guest. I just thought no one cared anymore. So, there you go.
What was the best War 3 game you've ever seen in your favorite player?
The best Warcraft 3 game that I've ever seen. One of that I enjoyed the most was... Grubby versus Insomnia on Plunder Isle. Long time ago. That was epic. Insomnia always was good for games, and we had like also in the first stages of Warcraft, we had some amazing players. R.S. Leo, who was later known as Leo Laporte, actually a US player. He was pretty darn good, and he had this style where he would just tower everyone in such an aggressive fashion that even Taker couldn't come close to him later on, and he would always abuse his Blade Master first. That was very innovative, and that was pretty epic. But I don't think a lot of people will remember those two.
Okay, let's see. Let's take a caller here. I'm going to just realize I didn't set the screens, but Breaker Rush is going to call in here. Let me set these screens while we're doing it. He's got a question about WCS.
Mm-hmm.
Hi there, guys.
Hey, how's it going, buddy?
Not too bad. Well, first and foremost, Calder, I'd like to just give you a compliment and say Your English is effectively native. I mean, that goes without saying.
That's a good point.
Come on. But the accent is what makes you complete, in my opinion. Sometimes I do casting in Chinese, but, you know, a lot of people complain about my accent. They say, oh, I can't understand what you're saying here. I have to re-explain it to my friends, things like that. But I did have a question about, say, the next WCS. My understanding is, like, basically, okay, I'm going to just go all out and say the China scene has to be reopened. And I say that because the last Neo TV Star League, it's like their NASL. The last one that took place got 27,000 viewers on the Chinese stream. The last NASL, which happened just a couple weeks afterwards, got 35,000 viewers in North America. Does that make sense? Do you guys think this is an endorsable proposition? Like, I think the whole reason why there was no WCS this year in China was largely due in part due to the fact that it, you know, just Heart of the Swarm hasn't been published there yet.
Oh, really?
I wasn't aware of that.
Whoa, really? Chan Man, you're Chinese, bro. How could you not know?
That doesn't mean I live in China, dude. I mean, jeez.
I didn't know that.
Wow.
Okay. Wow. Okay, so breaking news today. All right.
I mean, we have a lot of Chinese players already playing Heart of the Swarm, so I never really thought about it.
Exactly.
I mean,
Jim and Common.
Come
guys,
to mind. But in general, I don't think you have to be worried about WCS including China at some point. I feel that this time Blizzard just... You could see that they seem to be a little bit rushed. There were a lot of problems that could have been solved if they had more time to fix everything. But I feel the biggest problems for them was that they wanted to start this year and streamline everything. It was already tough enough to get everything in Korea on the road and make like all those Korean politics that we have involved in StarCraft go away and try to solve those problems. So I feel they just wanted to focus on the most important regions for now and the most stable ones, and they will definitely expand. They will definitely go to China. I mean, they would be crazy not to.
I know, right?
Good. It's just like, I was particularly worried because I actually called DJ Wheat yesterday on Inside the Game, and he had a completely, like, he kind of had a different take.
Really? What did
like,
he say?
I can see
it. I missed that.
I recorded it and put it on YouTube, actually. Let me see. Let me go ahead and pull that, and I'll post it in the chat if that's all right with you guys.
Okay.
What did he say?
I'm surprised. Wow.
He said something, it sounded like getting stricter or tighter. I can't really remember what exactly it was, but he said something like, it sounded like he had the word strict in it. Let me see if I can find that video.
Strict in regards to what? Like, I don't even know what you mean by that.
Ah, oh, jeez. Like, he's tightening it up. I don't know. Like, hang on. Let me look for the video. I think
if Jim were to do really well, or if Commer were to really well, I mean, it would just skyrocket in China.
Like, The thing is,
there is a reason why we had the finals of WCS last year in China.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
So there is just no way that Blizzard is not thinking about going to the Chinese server, and that is definitely going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, the fact 100%. That you said that Heart of the Swarm wasn't launched, that actually is a logical decision not to include them this time around.
The problem with China, on the other hand, though, is that you have a lot of problems there and a lot of regulations that Blizzard might have trouble to go through. So that was always one of the big issues that they had. And, I mean, we've seen all the problems that we had with the production the last year when the finals of WCS were being held. And a lot of them were just because it was really difficult, I think, for them to work with some of the Chinese production teams that they had to get. So that was definitely an issue. And that's something that is also like true for everything else that you do. If you want to go into China or something like this, there are a lot of politics involved that are a little bit difficult for them to stomach. But they are definitely interested in China.
I lived in China for over a year. I know what you're talking about. Come on. Like, I used to teach English there when I was 19 years old. Come on. I didn't even have a degree.
Do you ever get mugged in Shanghai?
No, but I did get exploited here. I got pickpocketed in Kunming, southwest end of China.
That's normal.
That's normal.
No, come on, it's no different than like, you know, Western Europe. It's the same shit too in Western Europe.
People usually only try to pick on me in France.
Or pickpocketed or anything anywhere in the world. I've been everywhere.
Have you ever been to Barcelona?
The only place I've not been is like Korea and Australia. Probably.
You ever been to Barcelona?
Yeah.
Dude, that place is crawling with pickpockets. So there's a huge mobile conference in Barcelona every year. And I've heard like everybody that I know that's gone there has been pickpocketed.
France, dude. In France,
mine's, It's because I don't earn anything for what I do in esports. I've never got any stuff to steal, and I probably look worse than the pickpockets anyway.
You should have a wallet to be pickpocketed.
I dress in general.
Guys tried to pickpocket me the last time I was in France for Iron Squid, and I can still remember 5 years ago when we were in France for the we played Warcraft 3 back then, and Falkings was playing Armor Team, and we won with a 5-0. We crushed them, and nobody expected that. So we had drank quite a bit, and then we went on the subway. And I still remember that I was a little bit intoxicated. And suddenly there was this guy behind me, and our doors opened. It was our stop, and the guy knew that. And I had my wallet in my back pocket, and he was trying to steal that. And I was so drunk that I actually didn't realize it at first. I realized someone was doing something at my ass, and I couldn't – that didn't make any sense to me. So I turned around, and I'm like – I just slapped his hand away, but I was so slow with my reaction that I just looked at him, and he starts to apologize. And I'm like, what was this guy just doing? What was that? And someone just grabs me and pulls me out, and I'm like, this is our stop, this is our stop. I mean, he timed it perfectly. If not for that, for me realizing it, I would have been outside of the subway the second that I realized what was going on. And then I was outside, and the door closed, and then this second I realized what was just happening. And I tilted. I got so mad. I wanted to go back into the subway and just slap this asshole around. I was so angry. But, we were already outside, and then we just celebrated.
Okay. Awesome. I got a pickpocket once. Nearly beat the shit out of him for it. Stealing an old lady's money. Come on, what's that all about?
Oh, God. All right, buddy. Yeah. Thanks for the call, man.
Catch you later, guys.
Yep, later. Funny. That's too funny.
Oh, we don't condone or endorse vigilante behavior either.
Yes.
Made that absolutely clear.
Exactly.
I had this one thing happen in Denmark when I was there for Copenhagen Games, which was funny as hell. Tournament's over. We're getting breakfast in the morning, and we're just sitting outside of a cafe. And there's this road going down. And suddenly, around the corner, comes a guy running like crazy. And he's just sprinting, full throttle. Cool. And suddenly, around the corner, come two policemen chasing him down the road. And I'm basically jumping in his way. I'm like, okay, something's wrong here. I'm jumping in his way, and I want to stop the guy. But suddenly, he shouts like, no, 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 no. And I'm so confused that I don't really know what's going on there. And I actually just slowed him down a little bit, but I really wanted to block the guy, and the police caught him in the end. But it was so funny that always happens to me for some reason. I mean, the guy is just sprints past everyone, and suddenly when he's already really close to us, these two policemen come around the corner like, "Ah, we're getting you." It was so funny.
That's crazy.
It's like that always happens.
Let's see. We got a question. Mufasa asks, "How is it learning Korean, and how good is it right now?"
My Korean is still pretty bad. I mean, especially these days, I practice a little bit more. But the problem is I don't really need Korean. That sounds a little bit weird, me living in Korea, but everyone that I'm working with and most people that I go out with, they have their English is good enough so that I can communicate with them. So you don't really need a lot of Korean. If you want to buy something, I mean, I can order things. I can buy things everywhere. So I'm able to get around, I get along, but it's like... These days, I'm putting in more of an effort to learn it on a proper level again. But it's pretty difficult. At first, you kind of have to learn how to read and write again. And it's one thing if you can then read something online. But if you talk to people, they also speak a little bit different. So, yeah. I'm trying to get better these days. But I would say to learn Korean so that you are very conversational, you need to practice it for quite a long time.
You pretty much have to speak it every day. You pretty much have to be in an environment where you can't speak English, right?
And also the people that you talk to, they have to accept that you have very basic vocabulary at first, so that they have to go down to that level.
Yeah.
And very few are willing to do that with you. Even if when there's, for example, someone and try... No matter where you talk to someone, they don't seem to understand that when you talk to someone who has very bad... vocabulary in a language, they have to first of all speak slow, second of all try to repeat the same phrase several times if they don't understand, but they just keep on babbling. It's just like you have these flood of words just hitting you, and you're like, dude, wait a second, I understood five words of what you said, I think I get the gist of it, but could you slow down for a second and not just talk me to the wall here? So that's one of the problems that always occurs here. But yeah,
British people are the best for that. When we go abroad, we've got a simple rule. If a foreign person doesn't understand our English, the first time we say it, we just say the same thing louder. And we just increase the volume by like a whole, you know, notch. Like, so you can be there. I'd like to order a taxi, please. They just look at you and go, I said I'd like. And you just get progressively louder until it sinks in, you know.
But that's fine. I mean, you don't have to get louder. I know what you're saying there, but at least you repeat the same sentence.
Exactly.
So exactly. It's like...
You're catching a word every time they say it. You're like,
exactly,
okay,
and you kind of get the idea, and then you can reply, and everything's fine. But I had very, very interesting and weird conversations, especially when some Koreans think they can speak English, and they just can't. So they see you're a foreigner, and they meet you in the elevator, and suddenly they talk to you in English, and you are really trying hard to find out what they are trying to tell you. But, yeah. I had this guy. I went to the gym. And it was really hot outside, so I had a sleeveless shirt, the training shirt, already on. And I go into the elevator, and there's this older Korean guy who enters with me. And there's already a girl in there just waiting. So the guy suddenly talks about, like, that I'm buff and stuff like that. And he's like, oh, good, good. And I'm like, no. And I'm getting all embarrassed, and my face gets red. And he's just continued talking like this. And then he looks at the girl, and he asks me, waifu? And I'm like, what? So I'm not quite sure if he wanted to ask me if that's my wife or if I want to marry her. I'm not quite sure what exactly that was about. But she has earphones in, okay? So she doesn't hear that at first. And I didn't get it. So he repeats it. And then I was like, no. She gets it at the same time. Looks around, looks at me, looks at him. And she's like, no. Starts laughing. He leaves. It turns out she's actually one of the girls working at my gym. And it was so funny because ever since then we'd like talk a little bit, but she just had to laugh so hard when he left the elevator, and he just knew a little bit of English, and he was immediately just trying to get the conversation going and right. Talking about, I don't know, it was really weird, but funny at the same time.
And then you realized he was just asking where the Wi-Fi was.
Right? Exactly.
and then it was super awkward for everyone. So.
Oh man, too funny.
Yeah, I was trying to be my wingman, probably, but yeah.
Let's see. Calder, do you have any free time where you could maybe stream some 1v1 games?
I definitely have some free time right now, and I'm thinking about doing a couple of additional things. It depends. Like, a lot of the casts that we do these days last pretty long. We have, like, usually double days for Code A, and GSTL is on Fridays and Saturdays. Besides that, I have the YouTube videos and a few other things that I'm doing. But I'm currently thinking about maybe doing a bit of a small show pretty soon, but that's only just in the works, and I don't want to commit too much to that before I really know it would work, because, like, I hate it to start something and then stop after, like, 4 weeks, and I don't want to start, like another talk show. I feel there are enough out there, but it's more of a YouTube thing, because I realize that I have a lot of YouTube subscribers that don't follow the scene as in-depth as, like, Redditors or Team Liquid people.
Yeah.
So I felt that for them it might be kind of interesting.
Cool.
Basically, this, like, right now I'm actually enjoying the spring in Korea a little bit. I had, like, times where I was, like, streaming so much or doing so much for YouTube and other things that I didn't have time to do anything, and right now I'm actually just taking, besides the things that I'm already doing, for myself, a little bit of a break, I feel, and spend a bit more time reading. Trying still to put YouTube content out there, but besides that, for now, I'm just enjoying the weather in Korea. And in 3 weeks, it's going to be like hot ass and really humid, and then I'm probably just staying in my apartment the entire day.
Right.
And then I would...
Yeah, people don't understand how much time it takes to even just... I mean, how much time it takes to be a YouTube content producer, honestly. For those of you who don't understand it, you should actually take a look at some of these. There's some behind the scenes kind of things that with some of the top YouTubers that are around, you know, like some of the top channels, and you'll find out that it's just like, you know, 70, 80 hour kind of weeks, man, doing it. You know, it seems like a really glamorous type of thing, but it takes a lot of work to actually produce good videos, market it properly, you know, pay attention to every little aspect of it so that, you know, you maximize.
I also don't really understand YouTube and a lot of things. Like, I have videos where I really put more effort in and like others. Mm-hmm. The tour that I did through the GOM studio, for example, I had a lot of takes that I took. I had to cut that together. I did like several of those takes multiple times because of the lighting and because I was unhappy with what was going on there. And that gets like a fair amount of viewers, and I'm happy with it. I'm like, okay, that's cool. And then I record videos that last 3 minutes, 5 minutes, where I'm just... the only reason why I record them is because I'm bored at that time. I'm sitting in front of my PC and I'm like, well, I have 10 minutes and I could do that video, so why not? Might as well. You upload it, and suddenly that thing gets like a shit ton of views.
Yeah.
And you're like, what? that's what I don't understand at all about it.
It just depends on what's viral, you know, or what, you know, what kind of. It's all kinds of things. Sometimes it's keywords. Sometimes, you know, like keywords that you could have, like, even like in a Reddit title or in a TL title thread, and it's all kinds of crazy stuff like that. And yeah, it's kind of random sometimes as to like how it, you know, what's hot and what's not, right? Sometimes, yeah. And but generally, you know, your YouTube videos get quite a bit of views, so.
I wanted to do more with YouTube this year. Like, I really neglected it in, after I moved to Korea. At the beginning, I recorded a few, but especially in 2012, I didn't do a lot with it.
Yeah.
Was focusing more on the live streams. And then in 2013, I promised myself, okay, I'm going to do put out at least the vlogs. And at some point, I just wanted to release one a day. Mm-hmm. And people have been liking that quite a lot. So for now, I'll definitely continue uploading this. Maybe not once a day, but as much as I can. And when I find topics and things that I actually can talk about.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I want to do a lot more for that.
It's much easier too. I mean, a lot of people are wondering why. Probably some people I know have asked about VODs, you know, YouTube VODs versus live streaming. And mm-hmm. The great thing about VODs, guys, is that it's a static place. You know, it's like a destination, static place that you can send people to, right? And it lasts. The live aspect of it is, like this show, for instance, this is only lasting 2 hours. So we have 2 hours to get people to watch this show, and then it's over. But with a VOD, you know, you can market that up for days and weeks and months and still get views on it, right? And still monetize it continually. So that's why the more consistent route of generating revenue is YouTube, I feel like.
Yeah, I have to admit that YouTube, in terms of like money, at least, I mean, it's different when you have a channel like Husky Day 9, Total Biscuit, but I have like 20,000 subscribers on my channel, so
that's good, man.
That, well,
it's not huge, but
it's not a point good. Where you can actually like make money off that. Like if I look at that is so not worth it. The amount of time that I put into the videos and the few cents that you get out of that, at least. Maybe I'm doing something wrong. I have no idea, but
usually I'm making more than a few cents, dude. You're doing something wrong if that's the case.
Yeah, but
you literally make a few cents.
It's a little bit more. I mean, like, I feel like in the best month that I have, you get like maybe $200 if you release a video every day. And when I had this one, that the 150,000 view video, mm-hmm. So usually that is definitely not worth the time. Like, not at all. If I put it down on the hour, I am better off going down to the McDonald's down the road and like, yeah. Making burgers, like that would be much more profitable than that.
Yeah, so are you on a YouTube channel or no? Or are you still independent? Are you part of a YouTube network or just? I mean, like any kind of network, or are you just independent?
I just got hooked up with one. I feel like a month ago.
Okay.
That didn't really come into play, so yeah. But it's for me. That's more about like building a bit of a followership on YouTube.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of how it is, right? I mean, there's that tipping point. In YouTube where you have to make you have to make videos that do have what's the actual analytic? I'm trying to think of the stat it's whatever stat that shows you just the amount of time like each person views your videos. I mean the longer that is, the average time that is, the more CPM you make, right? So that's a huge part of just all videos are not equal is kind of what I'm saying. Like that's
just like for me, YouTube is not a big thing. If you have like those big guys and that they started with YouTube right from the beginning, for them that's the main source of income and they can do that. But that's not really a point that is really important for me right now. I want to put that content out there because I have the opportunity. And also because I want to build a bit of a followership, but I don't see that ever going to a point where I have like a stable income from YouTube revenues. I would love that to happen, but I don't really.
Right, so it's just more of a channel for you, just a marketing channel for you. Okay, that's good. That's great. It's nice to have it's nice to have 20,000 YouTube followers, man, for sure. Even for if you're working on something cool, you know, you can let those folks know. Any other questions here? I'm looking.
That one comment that we have in the chat right now about doing a series of videos about the gym guaranteed views, that is a thing that I will probably never do. It's funny because that comes up every now and then, but I uploaded one, I think I uploaded one video where I talked a little bit about the gym, and it's even worse than StarCraft. So many people are going to be like, no, you have no idea what you're talking about. You should do this exercise and this thing and that, and I'm like, guys, I'm happy with what I do. I did that for a long time. Right now it works for me, so just accept that it works for me. It's like, it's the comments are horrible. It's like everyone has an
opinion.
Yeah,
but don't read them. You don't have to read them.
I read that online on whatever website, and if that guy says that, then it's right. And it's like, yeah.
I still think that's
maybe
you that
combine
is
the two. Like, you know, gym for nerds, and kind of, you know, try and blend the two into one. You know, like maybe that's the way forward. And
I mean,
all
we
the hardcore
laugh. Dude,
gym
we,
people
okay.
would ignore it, and all the nerds who secretly want to get buff but pretend they don't, because it's like totally a lifestyle choice. You know, get dudes like me. I guess I'm talking about.
So
it.
Basically, what you're saying is, I should convince Atosis that every time I teach him something at the gym, I should film him.
Yes.
There we go. That's
yeah,
it.
Dude,
that's the money.
I'm telling
right
you right now, you'd have 10,000 more YouTube subscribers.
Yeah, I doubt that he would agree to that, though.
Well, he probably would if you shared the revenue.
Gymcraft. Gymcraft.
Gymcraft. He's like Gymcraft.
Honestly, get that guy. Get that guy a job, Chris. Like, what a marketing genius.
Dude, me and so my other show, Unfiltered, right, with Destiny, right? We talked about we were talking about in terms of EG, because EG, you know, released that YouTube video that one time, right, with Machine Idra and.
Yeah.
And Control going to like 24-hour fitness or something, and that YouTube video got hundreds of thousands of views. So it's just like, why? I mean, you got there's a lot of you guys work out.
Thing. What personally, for example, that really annoys me is that video that we did back then with that was a whole production crew for the team houses. That doesn't have nearly as many views as it should have had, and that pisses me off to an extent that you can't possibly understand how much that pisses me off. The entire series is so awesome, and people have been asking for content like this all the time. But even though it was on Reddit and it's on, it's available, so many people don't know about it. It doesn't get the views just because it wasn't on one of the big channels, and that really annoys me. If you had better marketing behind this, it would have gotten like maybe a million views, or at least a few hundred thousand. But as it is, it has like 40,000 on my channel and another 30 on the StarTail channel. So that is so annoying to me, because the content in there is epic. It's
but
really
it's just,
good.
I mean, that just shows you that the quality of the YouTube. I've had discussion with other people that, particularly the folks that were doing the Quantic videos for a while. It doesn't matter sometimes about the quality. It just matters how you market it, right?
Yeah.
And it's kind of an unfortunate thing, because there are, like you said, I mean, a lot of the production that goes into it and how beautiful the videos and how they're set up are, you know, it's a really huge part of it. But in the end, it's like you have to get people to be interested and watch it, you know, and see it. And that sometimes is a weird, ephemeral thing, right? It's something that changes every day. So yeah, it's too bad. I think I saw part of it. I didn't actually see the entire series. But
I mean, it's like
high
30
quality.
Minutes long, a little
they're
bit
really
longer.
High quality.
So,
yeah,
you don't have to watch all of it. But there are so many people that are even now asking on comments on Reddit. Okay, can someone do a tour through the team houses? And that's like the best one that I know of. And I didn't do the production of that. I was just basically the host for the video. So it's not like I'm trying to promote myself there and being like, oh my god, I did such an awesome job, because I didn't do the video. But it's like so good. What they did there, and it's just sad.
Yeah, it's almost like you have to. There are a bunch of team houses, right? Like, it's not just one, right?
Yeah.
It's like
No.
It's almost like you have to market each one individually with some kind of angle with each team. You know, it's kind of crazy. You can't just like that was one of the things I was telling the Quantic folks. It's like, you can't just make a thread to say like, oh, I had 31 interviews with like all these great players. It's like, no, you gotta like take each individual one and market it differently. Yeah. So it's
completely
it's a lot of work.
I uploaded the Codec qualify videos, and people on Team Liquid have been saying, oh, you should all put all those interviews and everything in one thread. Like,
no, you don't
if
do
I
that.
Do that, it won't get nearly as much much exposure.
You
as
don't
it
do
actually
that
deserves.
Exactly. So, yeah. Oh, did they call you? Didn't call it Team House Cribs, right? That would have been. That would have been a cool name, man.
I'd love to actually see someone do a Cribs style series in esports, but
going
to like celebrities' houses and like see it. Like, the only people who made any money and like, had nice houses are like, what, like Angel Munoz and dudes like that. Like, everyone else has got like these shitty apartments. It would just be so funny. Like, look how cool the industry is to work in. By the way, yeah, that TV in the background's about 30 years old, you know? Like, so, yeah, someone should do it. Fucking esports Cribs.
Well, they have that LOL Cribs show, right? With TSM and everything, right? But
Yeah, but it's different when it's like, look how awesome our houses are.
I know, that would be pretty funny. Check out our houses. Let's see, any other questions here? Lots of good chatting, but...
The problem that you have in Korea with recording anything is translation. Like, even if you have a conversational Korean, you will never be able to properly translate. So that's the biggest thing the biggest barrier that you have whenever you want to do videos with like Koreans. It's really difficult.
Yeah, yeah. And that honestly, that's the reason why I mean, the only Korean I've ever had on my other show, Pro Corner, when I was having pros come on and walk through strategy and that stuff, was Violet. He was like, because I didn't want to have that. I didn't want to have that barrier of a translator kind of, you know, you just lose the whole intimacy of it, you know, right? When you have somebody that's translating for them, and it's a terrible experience when it comes to interviews. I agree with that. Let's see. So I have one question for you. Somebody mentioned like Warcraft 4 before, and So back when Warcraft 3 and Brood War were coexisting, right? I mean, both of those communities were coexisting at the time. If Warcraft 4 were to come out while Starcraft 2 was, I mean, obviously it's not going to come out for a long time. I mean, but if it were to come out while esports, StarCraft II esports was in its current state, can they coexist?
Well, first of all, to be completely honest, Brood War was completely dead in Europe.
Oh, was it?
At least in Germany. That was completely dead. And yes, some elitists will disagree with me, but if you look at the size of the community, we even tried to run a few Brood War tournaments back then, and the response that we got was like basically no people participating. Outside of Korea, there was a viewership, yes, and there were probably people playing, but if you look at an esports scene within Europe, it was completely dead. There were a couple of players there, yes, but if you put that in any kind of relation, that didn't exist. Brood War, on the big scale, was a Korean thing. Which is, by the way, one of the big problems that Casper has to understand. But since then, things changed a lot. So I feel if Warcraft 4 comes out, both things can exist at the same time. I don't really see a problem with that. But the way that Blizzard usually sets these things up is that they have... they bring out Legacy of the Void, and then maybe like 2 years after that, we have Warcraft 4.
They try not to overlap, right?
Yeah. I mean, it usually lines up really, really well. But I feel because the games are very different, it could exist at the same time, at least for a few years, and then people would probably start to transition out. And maybe Warcraft 4, if they ever do it, would get a bit of a better position when it comes to tournaments.
If they ever do it. What do you mean, if they ever do it? Of course they're going to do it. I mean...
Hey, I hope so. I already told all the guys at Blizzard that I acknowledge that their guy for StarCraft is D9, and I told them if they dare to give Warcraft 4 to any other caster than me, I'm going to burn down the headquarter myself. That is my scene. Warcraft 4 is mine. You can't take that away.
There you go. But yeah, I just can't imagine them not doing Warcraft 4. I mean, it's one of their anchor titles. You know, World of Warcraft is not Warcraft, guys. Okay,
it's so much fun to cast. You have no idea. It's so different from StarCraft. I casted Warcraft 3 again at WCG 2012 last year. I had a blast. It was basically, I looked at the lineup and it was all the guys were there. Not a single name that I didn't know. All the old guys that were still playing, all the Chinese players, the Koreans as well. The only name that was missing in the lineup was basically Grubby. And we casted the game, and I remember that when I casted it in 2008, I couldn't talk for like 3 days afterwards. With StarCraft, I don't have the problem. So the entire time I was wondering, well, did I just get used to like casting this? But I was like, well, back then I also casted like even more, so probably not. And I casted 3 games of Warcraft 3, and I got all pumped. And after that, my voice was gone and everything. I loved it. It was like, it's so different from StarCraft casting.
I mean, I can imagine. I mean, it is. I mean, there's a whole added facet to obviously Warcraft 3, and I mean Warcraft 4. Who knows what's going to be? It would be in it, but I just, you know, the reason I asked that is just because a good number of the big name Warcraft 3 players switched over to StarCraft, right? And exactly. So I'd be kind of interested to see what would happen. Would it just completely bisect the community? You know, the communities would never be fully saturated with the best RTS players in the world because of that, or you know, what would happen? Because you know, Blizzard owns both of those titles, and those two titles are probably the best RTS in the history of the games, or in the history of the gaming in general. So,
I mean, if you're a pro player, you will always have to be flexible enough to transition to another game, because at some point your game will die. StarCraft 2 won't exist for another 20 years. So that's
like an issue that we talk about, right, with esports, is that, you know, our sport can't. I mean, there's definitely a timeline or a life expectancy, right, of each of our sports. So,
but I feel with Blizzard, you have a company that will make sure that every single time one of their games gets so outdated that there is not really an interest in it anymore, they will come up with the next title. So it's a series. I mean, you can really see how that works. So if StarCraft at some point, if they replace it with Warcraft 4, they will support the hell out of Warcraft 4 to make sure that all those players that have been playing StarCraft have something to transition over to.
Yeah, but that's it's different between transitioning from Brood War to StarCraft 2 or StarCraft 2 to StarCraft 3, you know? Like, same title. It's going to be pretty similar. I mean, some things can translate. I mean, when you translate to Warcraft 4, I mean, there's a bigger bridge, right? Can't expect deal with all it. The players.
Of course you can expect it. It's their fucking job.
Well,
the Warcraft players had to do it as well.
Yeah.
So
if you
want to be in that environment, you have to be willing to make that. That's a commitment that you make once you start to be like a professional player. It also depends on how long you want to stay as a professional player. But you have to be able to make such a switch.
Yeah, but that's the issue that, you know, we don't talk about when we talk about League, right? Like, I feel like, who knows if there'll be a League of Legends 2 or not, but right now, the way that the game is, you know,
that's
they're just constantly...
where I'm out.
Oh, come on, dude.
I do not watch League at all. Like,
you don't have to watch League. You just have to know that, like, the game in which this esports is set up on is not a game that necessarily has that's going to have iterations every, five, 10 years. With a release, a product release that's every 5-10 years, right? And that's what we're talking about with RTS.
Riot is a very young company, so they don't have the history that Blizzard has, and they have to show that in the future. The people are always so fast to like judge Blizzard for their little bit of slow reaction time, and they don't realize that Blizzard compared to Riot is just so huge and has... When you're small, when you start out with your first game, you're much more flexible.
Yeah,
once that you grow and that you have a lot of titles to support, you have to need an infrastructure that makes you a little bit more foolproof, but at the same time it makes you slower to react. And Riot kind of has to prove that they are able to put out more games in the future that are able to be on top or like the successor of League. But I don't know as much about League as I would need to actually answer that in the sense that I could talk about the future of players that play that title these days.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have to talk about it too much, but the point I was trying to make is that those are good points that you made about Riot, but for me, it's almost like an opposite thing. Like, I feel like because Blizzard's had so much success in the past with these titles, and that they're anchor titles now, that they have to exist in the way that they do exist, that it gives them less flexibility to adapt to, you know, whatever is necessary, right, with esports. So, you know, it's a different challenge. They both have different challenges, but I was just going to bring that up. But
I mean, what League basically is, it's just a Dota clone.
Yep.
So that's right. How it started. And
yeah.
I mean, the concept is good. It's a nice team game. It was already fun in Warcraft 3 back then when the mod first appeared. And I'm sure that people will always be interested in playing this type of game. It's like there will always be a good RTS game. It doesn't matter if Blizzard at some point is going to drop the ball and someone else is going to pick it up. But there's always, in my opinion, the interest of having at least one RTS game out there that is being played on a competitive basis.
Yeah.
And with a genre like MOBA, I feel that the same is true.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Well, all right, buddy. I think... Why don't we wrap the show up? Some good questions today. Good stuff.
What? It's 7?
Yeah. See, time flies, man, when you're having just a good time, right?
It was fast.
Exactly, dude. Of course. We got to have you on again, man. Next time, play some League and we can talk about League.
Yeah.
We'll yeah, there's no way.
I think I'm more the Dota type than League.
Yeah, Dota. Okay, we can talk about Dota, of course.
I got that vibe as well.
Yeah. But why don't we do some shout-outs and thank yous? You got any you want to do, Kaldor?
Just everyone who watched, thanks for watching, and I hope that you enjoyed the show.
Awesome, man. Nice and short. Richard.
Keep it simple.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously, big shout-out to Kyle Dorman. It's great that he came on the show. One of the few kind of casters that I really admire in terms of just his ballsiness. And, you know, he's got a pretty sweet fucking gig. So it it does make me think there is some sense of justice in esports to see someone so personable doing so well. So hats off to you, brother. Mm-hmm. To all the people who listen to the course. To all the people who... I haven't had any flame today. Fuck, did I go through an entire show without saying anything ridiculous? Did that happen?
Dude, you went two shows. You took 2 days now without saying anything ridiculous. Because you had a great show yesterday, too. So, yeah,
the world
exactly.
is ending, bro. But and obviously, a shout-out to you, Chris, for doing a great job, as always.
Thanks, buddy. My shout-out to you, of course, Caldor. I can't believe... you know, I can't believe people don't have you on shows more, honestly. I was telling Richard and John that. I was like, I mean, Tom is like, he's totally, you know, a big name in our community too. So it's just like, why don't I see you more on these shows? So, you know, if we start that trend, that'd be great. And we'd love to have you on more often, Tom, because it's, you know, Caldark is, it's wonderful always having discussions with you. And Richard, thanks for doing these with me every week. It's a great time. And check out his VOD for the Esports Heaven too, guys, because good show he did yesterday with JP and Wheat about streaming. But
yeah, it was actually surprisingly good. It didn't descend into car crash. It was pretty sweet. So
I just thought it was funny you put Wheat in the heavens part and JP in the fire
the
part.
Thing is, like, with their experience, man, they could have been.
Dude, that was
so
okay. Cool. I was like, I mean, not saying that Wheat should be in the fire. I was just like, I don't know if JP deserves the fire either.
It was in Wheat's appearance fee contract that if I didn't put him in the heaven section, he wouldn't do it. So.
Right. No, if people are asking about the link, go ahead. Just look on Reddit. It's one of the threads in Reddit right now, so check it out. Let's see. Next week, guys, same time, same place. We're going to do a show about studio production. So we're going to have Trance, Scoots, and Elliot from NESL, who does all the Pulse and all that good stuff. So we're going to have three of the best on the show talking about...
Elliot is awesome.
Yeah, Elliot is. Nobody knows about him at all, too. So
Trans as well, but Elliot helped me a lot when I had huge sound problems with the microphones that I was using and the cameras.
Oh, really?
So I posted a YouTube video where I was asking people if they had any idea how to fix my problems, and Elliot immediately chatted me up on Skype. I've been dealing with him a lot when I was doing things for NASL, and he's an awesome, awesome guy. So
yeah,
he watched the video,
nice,
saw the tweet, and immediately messaged me and was like, okay, well, try this, try that. And he spent a long time with me going through this. He's awesome.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah, so hopefully you guys will get to know him next week, and it should be great. You know, so have your questions ready for next week, and we'll definitely ask them. But for now, that's going to be it for Climbing the Ladder. So for Champion V, Richard Lewis, and Caldor, we will see you next week.
Yep, peace.
Bye-bye.
There we go. Oh, VODs will be up really, really soon, guys. I'll upload it.